Well, as you know, we're shutting down this phase of the show, whatever that means, in a few weeks' time. But we said, look, we know this. We don't know much. But before we wrap it up and move on to the next plane, we need to make sure we get Stephen Tobolowsky back on with us. And so we have done that. And because when we have Tobo on, we've got to bring in Kerry. So first from New Orleans, Kerry Haskell, welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Rich and Bruce and Stephen.
And from Los Angeles, California, or nearby, Stephen Tobolowsky's disembodied voice. Hello.
How are you? Hi. It was so good to see you guys. So good to see you.
We can't see you, but I assume that you look phenomenal.
No, I look particularly good right now. Now, if you saw me 3 weeks ago, I'd have this gigantic beard. And I mean a huge, huge beard.
So that was was that for the film you were shooting with Corbin Burnson?
Yes, that was for the thing that they were calling Woodstockers. And it was like Corbin and I play hippies that went to the Woodstock Festival. And there are scenes from the Woodstock Festival played by two very handsome young men. But those handsome young men grow up to be Corbin and me. And so we were people who went to the Woodstock Music Festival in 68, and we never left. And so Corbin and I play two old hippies. And Susan Rattan plays my girlfriend. Barbara Hershey's in the show. Gary Busey is the bartender. So basically, we got all the old people, all the old people who could be around. And we had such a good and unusual time. Have you been to Woodstock? Have you been to that town?
I have not, Bruce, I'm sure, because you've got family and friends up in that area.
Oh, yeah, I've been to Woodstock many times, played in a number of places with Jack Elliott at Woodstock. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
Beautiful part of the world, and I think they've smoked a lot of grass or eaten a lot of grass brownies. It's like every place you go, there is a negotiation that goes on that is extremely complex, that should be simple. Like I'm trying to get a T-shirt for my brother. And I go, Paul should be probably a large size. He goes, okay, you want a large size T-shirt. Now, you know, we have a large, and what was I going to say? We are going to have an extra large T-shirt and a medium, but you want, wait, hold it a second. Do you know what kind of tea? And, you know, this negotiation goes on and on and on. And it's in every store you go in there. You go like, ice cream store. Could I get some vanilla? Okay. You want vanilla? And we have a cone. We could put in a cone. We could put in a cup. You want any sprinkles on? I said, just give me vanilla. The whole thing was extremely difficult, but we had so much fun, and it brought back so many good memories. You know, this is where I did that summer stock. Not right. Like when I was want to say, I went to the Forestburg Summer Theater, which was right down the road, and that's where I went with Beth Henley. Beth was my girlfriend at the time. And we thought we were going to have this amazingly romantic summer of doing Shakespeare and whatever. And it was the theater, they said, was haunted. that was haunted by the guy who built the theater. After he built the theater, he had his body buried under the stage, which is kind of creepy, but I guess it's cheap. I mean, you've already done the whole thing with construction. But that's where I did all of that sleepwalking. Do you remember all of that?
Yes.
I ended up in the middle of the night on stage in part of my bottom costume. We were doing Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was on stage doing Bottom's Dream. And I remember I snuck into Beth's dormitory, all-girl dormitory, and I said, listen, I want to lay down with you here tonight. Do not let me get out of bed. I don't want to end up on that stage again in the middle of the night. She says, okay. So 3:20, I wake up. I'm on stage. I've put on some of my costume, which means I woke up from my bed. Wow. I went down to the dressing room. I put on my doublet, my bottom pants and everything. And I wake up, I'm doing Bottoms Dream, and there in the audience is Beth watching me. And I said, I told you to wake me up. Why didn't you wake me up? She says, because I wanted to see it for myself. I wanted to see if you were telling me the truth.
So you had truly had a most rare vision.
I had a most rare vision. That's in fact, this is the last Forsberg story I'll tell you, because I could get on the Forsberg track. That was an amazing experience because the cook tried to murder us. And now, I mean that for real. The cook was Vinny. He was a chef from the Navy. And we're all eating creamed onions for dinner and roast beef or something before a performance of Midsummer Night's Dream. And Al Maisel, the head of the theater, came in and said, Vinny did not put poison in the onions. Vinny did not put poison in the onions. If anybody ever says Vinny did this, they could get the hat and coat and get the hell out of place. So I'm going like, well, that's a weird thing to say at dinner. You know, so I got up and I walked into the kitchen, and there was a giant canister of rat poison next to the creamed onions. Now, the vomiting started probably in about 20 minutes. Members of the theater company vanished, went off into the woods and started vomiting, were vomiting backstage. But as Al Maisel said, in the true spirit of the theater, the show must go on. So they brought in, you know, all the old people from Woodstock. They all came in to see the show. And Al Maisel put buckets on each side of the stage. So if you had to vomit, you would just keep in character, walk to the edge of the stage and vomit into the bucket and then come back. So I'm watching the beginning of the show. I'm getting sick myself at this point. And the audience of septuagenarians are sitting there enjoying the play as people, and I come out as Bottom. Methought I was. I stumble off stage, vomit into the bucket, come back, and the audience is enjoying the show as if it's an absolutely normal performance. So that's when I realized theater audiences could take a lot.
Well, that's putting the rude in Rude Mechanicals.
I'll say.
Very good. It's like the Asylum Hill Tavern, Stephen. Everywhere you go, someone's trying to kill you.
Everyone's trying to kill me. But you know, it only goes to show you that I think my story is just the same as everybody. Wherever we all go, someone is trying to kill us. that puts the new O in optimist.
I would be off creamed onions forever, too, I think, after that.
I think I have been.
Good. Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown. I was so happy to see you in a series that I think is fabulous with another friend of the show, Tim Simons. Nobody Likes This.
Oh, that was insane. That was, I had just got back from, is everything that happens to me insane? It's like I just got back in from out of town, and the show had no title. The show had no title. It was just, do you want to play a head rabbi in this show for Netflix? You're going to shoot the scene tomorrow. And I go, sure. I'll. Is there a script? Yeah, they'll send it to you, which they didn't. So the next morning I get the script. I'd look at it. I do some sort of rabbi scene. And then they say, oh, and you're coming back tomorrow to do another episode. And I go, excuse me, what? Yeah. And the show had no title. It was just the Aaron Foster project. And after about, I want to say 6 weeks after we finished, my agent called up and said, they finally have a name for the show. Nobody wants this. And I go, you're kidding. I mean, could there have been a worse title for a television show? Could you imagine Teeth? At this point, I had no idea if it was going to be any good. You know, there were so many rewrites and everything was going on that was crazy. But all the critic would have to say is, we agree with them completely. Yeah. And then I did a looping session for the show with a scene with me and Adam. And I went like, well, this is good. And I called my agent up and I said, you know, I just saw a part of this. Nobody wants this. And it was delightful, was the only word I could say. It's just Chris and Bell and Adam, they're just so wonderful. And the show was fast and funny, and just it was a delight to do.
Yeah, it's. I think I called it Nobody Likes This, Nobody Wants This. But yeah, it's great. Terrific stacked cast and really well written. A whole lot of fun. Check that out on Netflix. What else have you got going on?
Also on Netflix is another show called The Madness.
So I've heard great things about it.
I've been the most popular guy at the grocery store for the last 6 weeks because of Nobody Wants This. And they go, oh, my God, it's the rabbi. And like 3 or 4 days ago, I'm in the store and they go, oh, my God, it's the potential murderer. Oh, and I'm going, what? Yeah, and I'm going, what are you talking about? For The Madness. You were in a show, The Madness. And I go, I got to tell you, I don't know if I was or I wasn't. I'm going to have to look on my IMDb and see what you're talking about. Because when we shot The Madness in Toronto, we shot that in Toronto. It had, again, like Aaron Foster Project, it had no title. So now you do these shows without titles. And then I guess they look at it and they think, what can we call this show? And so the title was probably the last thing they came up with for that show. But I love doing it. It was, again, a great cast. We had a wonderful time doing it. And it was in Canada, so you had the most polite crew in the world. But it was delightful. But it's a scary show. It's a scary show, is the way I think of it. At least the script I was in was pretty scary. You know,
has that become more commonplace that you're working on projects that they haven't even decided a title on yet?
I think what is more commonplace is that they are all works in process. They take a look at what they're shooting today and they decide, do we need another scene for next week to carry this character forward? And so you don't start with the finished script. I remember when we did, what movie was that with Bridget Fonda and I play kind of a seductive murder. We had Barbe Schroeder directed it. We had the completed script 2 months before we started shooting. We actually rehearsed the entire movie, blocked it and rehearsed it for a month before we started filming it. And now what I think happens is they start shooting. They have an idea of a spark, a little bit of flame that they think they're going to go with, a bit of story flame they're going to go with. And then they watch it and they take story bits and pieces and continue with through lines. So you never know if you're going to be in a lot or a little, or if, I have no idea if I'm going to be in season 2 of either of these shows. I don't know what's happening. And a lot of times they'll just call you the day before and say, Stephen, can you come in and do this? Mm-hmm.
Single white female, right?
Single white female. That was it. Oh, yeah. We rehearsed the entire movie in order. It was all done. It was all written. And so that doesn't happen anymore. They're all works in progress, which means it's good to have improvisatory skills. Mm-hmm. As an actor, you got to be able to kind of swing both ways of whatever happens on the set.
Do you think that's come out of the last few years of, you know, first the pandemic delays and then the different strikes and stuff?
Yes.
And they're just sort of trying to play catch up at this point?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's catch up, but I think it's a whole new world is what it's called. It's And I think you're right. The meteor hit with the pandemic and the big dinosaurs started to die. And if you walk around here in Los Angeles, you see studios closed right and left. Television production stopped. And when television production stopped, the people who made commercials, they were out of business. So the commercial industry left Los Angeles. The big dinosaur now is Netflix and other streaming services. And so those services really use the process you were talking about, Carrie, that they just throw it against the wall and they see which way they're going to go with it. And they have a kind of outline as to what they want, but it changes. It could change at any moment. And that's the new thing that's happening.
How are you feeling, Stephen? The last time we talked with you, you were feeling better, but you had dealt with that that strange long COVID illness that took you down.
Let me tell you, I saw my dear compadre David Jen and his wife Ellen. They came from Seattle down here to talk to me, and they talked about a strange malady which they were experiencing, and his wife, you know, was experiencing that she had COVID, and then after COVID, she started having vertigo, and she lost hearing in one of her ears. And I'm going like, oh my God, it's what I went through. Mm. And I think I've heard now, I went into a store today, and the woman in the store who was the cashier was an actress. And we were talking about, I think, the madness, something that she had just seen and liked. And she said, you know, I had to kind of get this second job. Not only so much work had left California, but I had the weirdest thing happen to me. ..
Wow.
I got COVID. I lost hearing in my left ear. And then I started having problems with my balance. So I think it's a thing. And David's wife said that she believes it is a form of long COVID, a symptom of that. So I'm much better. I'm much better. In fact, I saw the doctor again this week. Much better with that. I'm not having terrible balance problems now, but I'm still deaf in my left ear.
Wow.
And it's, you know, but I still count myself as one of the lucky ones. You know, there is so much weird sickness going around. I feel like I'm lucky just as it is. What's it like in New Orleans? Is it terrible there?
It doesn't seem to be. I mean, COVID, or at least not, I don't know anybody that's sort of suffering from the really weird things, but I do know a couple of people that are still recovering from or suffering from sort of the fatigue side of long COVID, where they're just, they ever since they had their bout, they just don't have, you know, it's been in some cases 2-3 years, and they just, their energy levels have not returned. That's what I hear from a few of my friends down here.
Yeah. Rich, how's it in Maine?
I don't think it's too bad here, but I've got a cousin who I got to see this fall when I was traveling broadcasting football. She lives down in Hoboken, New Jersey, and she's dealing with that. And she had COVID 2 years ago, but she'll have these bouts where she can barely get herself out of bed.
So that must be, you know, you got to believe that all the weird side effects I ended up having and my loss of energy, even though I have a lot more energy now than I did before. But it was crazy creepy. When I was doing a Nobody Wants This, I was kind of in the middle of that. And in one of my first scenes, I have to run up to Adam, go, and we're shooting it at 1 a.m. in Hollywood, 1 a.m. I'm a guy, 73 years old. I'm having fatigue problems with COVID too, balance problems. And they want me to run up in my hard-soled shoes up a hill like 60 yards to get the young strapping Adam Brody, to get to him to say, oh, here, for my introduction. It's like, why can't he run up to me?
Right.
Like that I'm at my car and goes, oh, Rabbi Cohen, could I speak to you for a second? It's good to see you, you know, but no, I had to do the running at 1 a.m. But it's I do think I've lucked out in so many ways in my life. So many, I realized when I was talking to Dear David Chen that the Tobolowsky files and my books and the stories, it all comes down to two words, close calls, close calls, close calls that I have had. And times in which I was lucky, you know, being held hostage at gunpoint, close call. When I met Beth, close call. It was just out of nowhere. I decided I was depressed. I was scared at the beginning of my sophomore year, and I ran into a deserted theater, the Margot Jones Theater, pitch black. I'm sitting up in the seats, and they have a ghost light on stage. A ghost light, you know, so you don't trip on the stage and break your neck. And I'm there, and I am praying to whatever forces there may be that, will I get a part in college this year? Will I be able to be an actor? What is my life? What is my future? And I hear the door open and shut at the theater. I hear footsteps coming from the backstage. I'm going like, oh, it's security to throw me out. And out on stage comes this little girl. Well, she was a freshman girl in blue jeans and a t-shirt. And she walks out on stage and walks into the ghost light, which is this down light to make sure you don't trip on anything. And she immediately assumes the position of a tightrope walker. And I'm in the audience. She doesn't see me. It's absolute blackness. And I'm sitting there, and she pretends to walk across an imaginary tightrope. And as she walked across the stage, I fell in love. She jumped off the stage, ran away, and I had no idea who this person was, except she did a tightrope walk. And I had to go, who is this person and how can I find this person? And the next several weeks was me asking people, okay, this is the only description I have. You know, and she was a freshman, so nobody knew any of the old reliables. You know, one Kathy Bates, it wasn't Pat Richardson. Yet, you know, the people were going to SMU at the time. And I ended up tracking Beth down, and we ended up together for 16 years. And she ended up watching me sleepwalk in New York without any assistance.
Close calls.
It's close calls.
How are those grandchildren doing?
Oh, grandbabies. This I want everybody in Maine knows this. Everyone within the sound of my voice. Why didn't they tell us the grandbabies were the most fun you would ever have in your life? Nobody said this when I was a child. Nobody said, oh, you want to stick around and be healthy and everything to play with your grandbabies, because that's going to be as much fun as you're ever going to have. All love, no responsibility. It's so great. And so Dior, baby Dior, was over at the house the other day, and she said she wanted to draw a picture. And she drew a picture, and I look at it, I'm going like, what the heck is this? It is amazing. And she said, I'm calling it the Hotel of Happy Dreams. And I go, I'm going to get this framed.
Wow.
I'm going to get this picture framed. And it's this building with windows, square windows there. And in the different windows are different faces that are smiling and hooray, and little words around it going, wow, hooray, happy. It's the Hotel of Happy Dreams. And she said to me, Papa, she's Papa, with that, Papa, a lot of times people have trouble with nightmares. And so that's when you sleep and you're afraid at night. But I wanted to make a hotel of happy dreams to where if people had nightmares, they could check into this hotel and you would only have happy dreams. And I go, like, thank you for allowing me to be 73 years old and learning now about the Hotel of Happy Dreams. I am so fortunate. And I look forward to baby day whenever it comes. Whenever it comes, I love it.
Well, I hope there's room for all of us in the Hotel of Happy Dreams.
That would be good.
Stephen, yeah. I just want to thank you for the countless times you've visited with us on the show. It is always a highlight to get to talk with you, and I'm so grateful for your kindness and your generosity with your time through the years.
Well, thank you, and I thank you guys. I thank you guys so much. And again, one of the greatest times I ever had was after our moments that I was able to be in that studio there with you guys, and do the show in the studio. That was magnificent.
I'm looking at a picture of you here in the studio, right on the wall, that I'll be taking with me when they shut this place down in a few weeks. And I hope we can get you back on in the next version of the show, which it may just be me going door to door and talking with people, but I'll call you up on my phone.
Call us up on the phone, and the Hotel of Happy Dreams is always going to be open here for you guys, always.
Well, we appreciate that. Stephen, thank you so much, as always. Thanks, happy holiday season to you and Ann and the family, and we wish you a happy new year, too.
Same thing to you, Rich, and same thing to you, Carrie. Thank you.
Stephen Tobolowsky with us here on Downtown. We'll take a quick break. Be back.